Thank you for standing by. Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. All participants will be in a listen-only mode for the duration of the call. During the question and answer session, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one. I would now like to turn the call over to John Leslie. You may begin.
Thank you so much, operator. Good afternoon and good morning to everyone, and thank you so much for dialing in to hear about the upcoming launch and mission of NOAA's GOES-S satellite. GOES-S, the second of NOAA's Advanced Geostationary Weather Satellite series, is scheduled to lift off on March 1st at 5:02 p.m. Eastern from Cape Canaveral Air Force Station in Florida. The launch will be carried live on NASA TV. On the line to talk about GOES-S, A.J. Mehta, Acting Deputy Director for Systems at NOAA's Satellite and Information Service, Tim Walsh, Acting System Program Director at the GOES-R Series Program, Joe Pica, Director of the Office of Observations at NOAA's National Weather Service, Sandra Smalley, Director of NASA's Joint Agency Satellite Division, and Jana Lewis, Division Chief of Predictive Services at the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection. Now, after we hear from our last speaker, we will open up for your questions. So with that, I'll turn it over to A.J. Mehta.
All right. Thank you, John, and thanks for everyone that's participating on the call. So a month from now, GOES-S, the second in NOAA's Next Generation Geostationary Operational Environmental Satellite series, will lift off from Cape Canaveral, Florida. GOES-S will join GOES-16, which was launched late in 2016, and JPSS-1, which was launched last November, to complete NOAA's new operational geostationary and polar orbiting satellite fleet. When it reaches orbit, GOES-S will be known as GOES-17. It'll become the GOES-West operational satellite in late 2018, opposite GOES-16, which is in the GOES-East position. In the GOES-West position, GOES-17 will provide coverage of the western U.S., Alaska, Hawaii, the Pacific Ocean, Mexico, and Central America. And we'll hear more from Joe Pica from NOAA's National Weather Service. You'll hear more details from him. Like GOES-16, GOES-S is a NOAA mission which was developed in partnership with NASA. NASA led the development of the satellite and will provide the launch services. NOAA will command and control the satellite and has responsibility for all the scientific applications of the data, as well as the responsibility to distribute the data to our primary user, the National Weather Service, and to other users around the world. With the launch of GOES-S, NOAA's fleet of next-generation geostationary satellites is growing, and coupled with the use of our Japanese partner's Advanced Himawari satellite, we're able to cover about half the planet with the most sophisticated weather forecast technology ever flown in space. For many decades, NOAA satellites have been the backbone of our weather and climate forecast. But as we've already seen with GOES-16, the GOES-R series is a quantum leap above any of its predecessors. GOES-16, even beyond the spectacular imagery, is already proving to be a game changer, with much more refined, higher quality data for faster, more accurate weather forecasts and warnings. This means more lives are saved and better environmental intelligence for state and local officials, who, for example, may need to make decisions about when to call for evacuations ahead of life-threatening wildfires. We saw this in California in 2017. We also saw strong storms that produced floods and mudslides. The reach of the GOES-R satellite series extends far beyond our U.S. borders. Since the early 1970s, NOAA has maintained a full and open policy regarding its satellite data and provided geostationary satellite imagery to countries and organizations throughout the Western Hemisphere. We also share data from our polar orbiting satellites. Using our GOES and polar orbiting data will enable other countries to issue faster and more accurate weather forecasts and warnings. In turn, we benefit from their data. In fact, as we look to continue improving our weather forecast, we will have to rely more and more on partner missions to meet our goals. The more than 10 years of hard work and sacrifice from the NOAA NASA GOES-R program community is paying major dividends for the American people. Now I'll turn it over to Tim Walsh, who's the acting director for the GOES-R program.
Thank you, AJ. Good afternoon and good morning to all those that are listening. I am Tim Walsh, as AJ mentioned. I'm the acting system program director for the GOES-R program. We just heard AJ mention that NOAA's GOES-S is the second in a new series of game-changing geostationary weather satellites. Its coverage will include North America, Central America, parts of South America, and the Pacific Ocean extending all the way to New Zealand. GOES-S, which will be known as GOES-17 once we achieve geostationary orbit, will provide high-resolution imagery of Alaska and surrounding high-latitude areas previously unavailable or unusable from NOAA's current geostationary constellation. When it launches on March 1st and becomes operational later this year, GOES-S will see the West in true high definition, and along with the remaining satellites in the GOES-R series, will extend the life of NOAA's geostationary satellite constellation through 2036. The GOES-R series program underscores NOAA's commitment to flying the best possible geostationary satellites to support and improve the ability for the National Weather Service to forecast weather as accurately as possible, especially in life-threatening conditions that we can all face. Joe Pica will talk about this more, but the West Coast states, as we have seen recently over the past few months, can be especially impacted by wildfires, dense fog, and very strong storms that can produce deadly floods and mudslides. In its operational position over the West Coast, GOES-S will make a positive difference in forecasting these events. Like GOES-16, GOES-S and the remaining satellites in the series GOES-T and U will fly six sophisticated new instruments. The Advanced Baseline Imager, or ABI, is our primary instrument. The ABI, as we've already seen on GOES-16, is taking some of the most vivid imagery of the Western Hemisphere that we've ever seen. You may recall the tremendous GOES-16 imagery from last year's hurricane season, including those of Hurricanes Harvey, Irma, and Maria. The ABI has 16 spectral bands, compared to just 5 on NOAA's previous generation GOES spacecraft. ABI provides 3 times more spectral information with 4 times the resolution at a scanning speed 5 times faster than the previous GOES imagers. These satellites are giving us the ability to look at storms as often as every 30 seconds, allowing forecasters to see storms as they're developing instead of as they've already happened. Then there's the Geostationary Lightning Mapper, or GLM, which on GOES-16 became the first ever operational lightning mapper flown in geostationary orbit. GLM is giving us an accurate picture of total lightning activity, not just cloud to ground, but also cloud to cloud, continually both day and night across the Western Hemisphere. Intensifying severe storms often exhibit a significant increase in total lightning activity, particularly in cloud lightning. We also have 4 other sophisticated instruments that closely monitor solar and space weather activity to predict phenomena that may impact GPS signals, radio communications, and critical infrastructure on the Earth, including power grids. These new satellites are generating 34 new products for us that are boosting NOAA's ability to accurately forecast weather on Earth and in space. For example, a volcanic ash product from our ABI instrument is used to identify areas where volcanic ash is present and potentially hazardous, allowing for more accurate volcanic ash advisories to be issued for aviation, air quality, and public health warnings. Beyond weather forecasting, GOES-S will be a part of the international satellite-based search and rescue network called SARSAT, and they'll help save lives by detecting distress signals on orbit from emergency beacons on the Earth. The other major system component for the GOES-R system is the ground segment. Ground support for these powerful satellites is a major part of the story. The ground segment, which has 2 primary locations in Suitland, Maryland, and Wallops Island, Virginia, operates the satellites, receives the data, and generates and distributes information in real time. A 3rd facility in Fairmont, West Virginia, serves as a backup in case of systems or communications failures of the other 2 sites. Once launched, GOES-S will undergo testing and validation for approximately 6 months and will be operational by the end of the year as the new GOES-West satellite. GOES-16 and GOES-17 will work together to provide fast, high-resolution imagery and data for the majority of the Western Hemisphere, from the west coast of Africa all the way to New Zealand. Bringing GOES-16 and GOES-S from development to launch is a true team effort. I really want to echo AJ's kudos to the entire GOES program team, including our partners at NASA and our lead contractors, both Lockheed Martin and Harris, and I will say there's a multitude of other contractors that are supporting us, for their stellar contributions for getting the team ready for launch. We're extremely excited to get GOES-S off the ground and operational as GOES-17 along with GOES-16. Thank you very much. Our next speaker will be Joe Pica. Joe is the director of the Office of Observations for NOAA's National Weather Service. Joe.
Thank you, Tim. It's a pleasure to be here, and I thank everyone for taking part in this conference. NOAA satellites are crucial to weather forecasting. Over the past year and a half, we've had two successful satellite launches that really improved our technology for monitoring Earth's weather. First, we launched GOES-R, our next-generation geostationary satellite, and that satellite is now operational in the GOES East position, providing incredible data to our forecasters. And last November, we launched JPSS-1, now NOAA 20, a polar satellite that will add substantially to our global observations that feed our models. Today, we're here to talk about NOAA's GOES-S satellite. GOES-S, our latest and greatest, will complete the implementation of high-resolution coverage of the entire country, delivering better observations faster than ever before. GOES-S will become GOES-West and keep an eye on the weather patterns that impact the West. National Weather Service forecasters will use GOES-S to monitor atmospheric river and estimate rainfall associated with the most intense storms. It will help us track plumes from volcanic eruptions and see more clearly the total evolution of Pacific Ocean tropical storms. The new satellite will augment observations over the Pacific Ocean and around mountain ranges where radar coverage is limited or blocked. Marine forecasts will improve with GOES-S high-resolution imagery, as we see features in the atmosphere and ocean that previous instruments did not allow. Combining these images with rapid updates every 30 seconds will help us predict storm systems more accurately and in real time. GOES-S sister satellite, GOES-16, now GOES East in operations, has delivered amazing imagery. The National Weather Service is using this data in ways we planned such for forecasting, but in ways we didn't even imagine we could before. For example, in August, as Hurricane Harvey made landfall, our forecasters in Corpus Christi, Texas, dissected high-resolution rapid scan images from GOES-16 in concert with data from their Doppler radar and were able to alert emergency managers when they would have a window of opportunity as the Hurricane Eye was passing over the region and calming to evacuate 200 people to safety before the other side of the Hurricane Eye wall struck. Emergency managers were able to make local decisions to get people to safety based on information from Weather Service forecasters that use GOES-16 that was tracking the eye in real time. GOES-16 also assisted in combating wildfires. We currently issue red flag warnings and critical weather information 1 to 2 days in advance. Leveraging high-resolution images from GOES-16 and its new spectral bands in the shortwave and near-infrared, forecasters were able to provide real-time fire intensity data to fire managers. In 2017, forecasters used GOES-16 to provide actionable information to firefighters such as the location of hot spots, head fires, wind shift, and rapid spreading of fires. Forecasters were able to even alert firefighters of several fires in certain cases before they even received a 911 call on the ground. This time-saving can be life-saving. Smoke from wildfires impacts more people than a fire. Tracking and forecasting smoke concentrations have been directly enhanced by real-time availability of imagery from the GOES-16 satellite, and GOES-S will provide the same benefits to the West. Our aviation weather forecasting ability will also be improved. The new satellite will more accurately show the occurrence of fog and ice, wind, and lightning. This will help with aircraft flight planning and routing of flights to avoid hazardous conditions, as well as reducing disruptions to airport operations. Well, I could go on and on, but I'll save that for launch day. In closing, NOAA's GOES-S satellite is another step forward in our effort to build a weather-ready nation. By advancing our observing capabilities to this extraordinary level, we will be able to offer new and improved forecast products and services to continue to save lives and property. Next up is Sandra Smalley, Director of NASA's Joint Agency Satellite Division. Sandra?
Thank you, Joe, and good afternoon, everyone. I'm thrilled to be a part of the GOES-R program and to have the opportunity to talk to you about the exciting and very important mission that will continue to transform weather forecasting, as you've heard from my fellow panelists. The launch of the GOES-S spacecraft continues over 40 years of NOAA-NASA collaboration and the development of geostationary operational environmental satellites. the Joint Agency Satellite Division within NASA's Science Mission Directorate plays an important role in our partnership with NOAA. We serve as the acquisition arm for NOAA, bringing to bear NASA's engineering and scientific expertise in building satellite flight and ground systems. This partnership began when NASA designed, built, and launched the Synchronous Meteorological Satellite 1, SMS-1, in May of 1974. This launch was followed by SMS-2 in February of 75. These SMS satellites served as prototypes, providing a foundation for the operational NOAA GOES program. The first operational GOES satellite, GOES-1, launched in October of 75. And most recent GOES satellite, GOES-16, was launched in November of 2016. GOES-S, the sister satellite of GOES-16, will be renamed GOES-17 once in orbit. The GOES-S satellite will launch on an Atlas 541 launch vehicle on March 1st at 5:02 p.m. from the Space Launch Complex 41 at Cape Canaveral Air Force Station in Florida. We have a two-hour launch window. As the launch day approaches, here are a few key events that I would like to share. In preparation for launch, we will conduct a launch readiness review 2 days prior to launch to authorize approval to proceed to launch countdown. 1 day prior to launch, the Atlas V launch vehicle with the spacecraft on top will be rolled out to the launch pad and fueling operations of the first stage will begin. On the day of the launch, countdown operations are expected to begin at launch minus 7 hours, with the powering up of the launch vehicle. Cryogenic propulsion tanking of the Centaur upper stage will commence at launch minus 2 hours, and a final go, no-go pull will be conducted at launch minus 7 minutes. After launch, the first stage separation is expected to occur at launch plus 4.5 minutes. There will be 3 burns of the Centaur upper stage prior to spacecraft separation. The spacecraft is expected to separate from the launch from the Atlas V Centaur upper stage at approximately launch plus 3.5 hours after a 3-hour coast period between the second and third upper stage burns. Upon spacecraft separation, the spacecraft's propulsion system will be used to transfer the spacecraft to geostationary orbit, which will take approximately 2 weeks. Pre-launch activities will be aired live on NASA TV and carried online at nasa.gov/live. Go goes F. And now I'd like to turn it over to Jana.
Thank you, Sandra. This is Jana Lewis, California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, CAL FIRE, Division Chief in Predictive Services. As we know, weather is dynamic and ever-changing. CAL FIRE is an end user of all the weather products created with the use of satellite imagery. Our Predictive Services program, which comprises of the U.S. Forest Service, BLM, and CAL FIRE, along with the National Weather Service, provides daily weather information and forecasts to CAL FIRE and other agencies. Fire weather forecasters use satellite imagery to help predict current fire behavior and short-term fire weather forecasting 3 to 7 days in advance. Our predictive services, CAL FIRE, and other fire agencies have daily fire weather briefings based on satellite imagery and other related atmospheric data inputs. The National Weather Service provides daily fire weather forecasts, fire warnings, and fire watches to fire agencies and to the public. This updated and current forecast provides information to help fire agencies and the public prepare for the events. The current weather information is used daily by our station-level firefighters. It is read on a unit-wide basis several times a day. The current weather information is also used to assist with staffing additional emergency equipment or prevention measures such as burn bans during heightened fire season. As we saw during the wind events in October 2017 in Northern California, the National Weather Service, along with our predictive services, provided weather forecasting to fire agencies and the public. The National Weather Service posted red flag warnings for a large part of Northern California and parts of Southern California. This information was used by decision makers to prepare for potential fire activity. CAL FIRE was able to increase their staffing throughout Northern California and various parts of Southern California. The result of the wind event was a large number of fires in Northern California. CAL FIRE was able to dispatch 4 incident management teams overnight to assist with the firefight. The satellite imagery also helped to see how large of scale this fire event was. The same thing happened in December. We had a wind event in Southern California. The National Weather Service and Predictive Services provided early warning of the wind event. CAL FIRE was able to pre-position fire equipment in the predicted high wind areas, such as Ventura County, which had the Thomas Fire. The Thomas Fire started in Ventura County and burned into Santa Barbara County. They experienced strong winds for several days. The use of the satellite imagery, along with modeling, the National Weather Service and our incident meteorologists predicted wind severity and wind changes throughout the event on the fire. In addition, once the fire was over, there was a rain forecast of severe rains over the Thomas Fire. This information helped the emergency services prepare for an evacuation in the Montecito area or the mudslide-prone areas. These are just a few examples of satellite imagery assisting with emergency services. But CAL FIRE is excited to be a part of the GOES-S, and we look forward to seeing the data. Thank you. Back to you, John.
Okay, Jana, thank you so much. Well, right now we'll take questions from the media on the phone call. Media, please specify who you'd like to address your question, and also please state your affiliation. Operator, please remind the call participants how they can ask a question, and please queue up the first one.
Absolutely. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 from your phone, unmute your line, and record your first and your last name clearly when prompted. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press star 2. One moment as we wait for the first question. I just have a question that came through. Our first question comes from Calla Colefield from space.com. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you for taking the time to talk. I think this question would be for Tim Walsh. I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit more specifically. You said that GOES-17, as the GOES-West satellite, will see some areas that were, I think you said, previously unknowable or the data was unusable. Can you be a little more specific about what those regions are or, yeah, just the increased capability of this compared to the previous GOES-West satellites?
Absolutely. And what I was referring to, of course, we will position GOES-17 on the equator. So literally the look angle of the satellite will not change at all. What we are seeing, though, with our new advanced baseline imager is increased spatial resolution. And with that resolution and the other capabilities, the other spectral bands that we have, we can see things that are out extending towards the limb of the Earth disk that we can see in ways that we had not been able to see before. To give you an example, earlier, you know, right now GOES-16 was formally tested at about 90 degrees west longitude, which is over roughly over New Orleans. And from there, we were able to look up and see ice flows up in the Hudson Bay in ways that we could never see with previous GOES spacecraft. In other words, the spatial resolution improvements were able to give us some knowledge that we had not been able to use previously. Then we went ahead and we moved GOES-16 to 75 degrees west longitude, which is the normal GOES east position. From there, we've been able to see we were able to distinguish landmass features and other weather phenomena to some extent over the western part of Africa, even extending up to parts of Europe. Of course, we're not using it for European weather forecasting, but what I'm saying is that you could see things on the limb that were previously not usable in the past. We're hoping that when we move GOES-17 to 137 degrees west longitude, which is our GOES-West position, that we'll see features in Alaska that we were previously not able to, you know, support the local meteorological forecasters in the past. Does that help?
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Marcia Smith from spacepolicyonline.com. You may begin.
Thanks so much. My question is to Mr. Maeda. And you made a comment about how together with Japan's advanced Himawari, you can now cover half the world. and you said that we're going to have to rely more and more on our partners. Could you expand on that a bit? You know, why do we need to rely more and more on partners? And also, what other countries are looking at using this kind of advanced technology besides the U.S. and Japan?
Okay, well, so yes, thank you for the question. So my comment about relying on partners more really had to do with not necessarily geostationary satellites, but all of NOAA's satellite fleet. So, for example, we rely on the Europeans, specifically EUMETSAT, which is their organization that flies their meteorological satellites. We rely on their satellites to provide us data that feed our weather models. In the future, as we look to other countries like Korea, Japan, that are also launching low Earth orbiting satellites, we'll be able to use all that data in our models. We can never afford to build all the satellites we need and all the instruments we need to cover the full suite of measurements and observations we need. So we rely on partners to provide a lot of that data.
So are there plans for some of these other countries to use the same kind of technology that's in these new GOES satellites and in Japan's Himawari?
Yes, I believe Korea, and Tim, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Korea is planning on using the same kind of technology as well in their geostationary satellites. But my
correct.
Comment had to do with really all kinds of weather data, not just from geostationary satellites.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Stephen Clark from Spaceflight Now. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. A couple of questions, probably for AJ or Tim. Can you discuss, you know, the decision that went into why place GOES 16 in the GOES East position and GOES 17 or GOES S, soon to be GOES 17 in the GOES West position? You know, what went into your thinking with your fleet management there? And apologies if I missed this, but secondly, when do you expect to have GOES S or GOES 17 in service? Thanks.
Tim, you want to take that one?
Sure. I see it. Let me make sure I understand the question. The first question was related to why we moved 16 to the east position. And
Right. Why the first went to east and the second goes R series going to GOES West?
It's a very understandable question. What we did is, if you look at the fuel propellant and the propellant remaining on board the spacecraft, GOES 13 was the oldest spacecraft, and originally that was one of the first factors that we considered. We also talked to the National Weather Service, our partners. As you can imagine, we were heading into the hurricane season. Even though we were validating data, we were able to pick up a lot of imagery that was helpful in our validation of our products. And was used during the actual, even though we were in a non-operational fashion, we were in a non-operational mode, the data was used to some extent operationally. I would also defer to Joe Pica, who may have some additional advice on this or additional insight on this, but I believe there are a lot of factors that were included. The one that pops to mind immediately to me was the fact that GOES 13 was the oldest spacecraft.
This is Joe Pica. I'll just add on to that answer. That it was considered, just as Tim suggested, the state of the constellation as well as the needs of the mission. But I'd also state that we were looking forward to NOAA GOES S launching and getting into operations as soon as possible so that we have full coverage of the same capability throughout our whole mission area covering both east and west.
Okay, and I think my other question was I may have missed this, and I apologize from your remarks earlier, but when do you expect GOES S to be in service, and what happens to, I think, GOES 15 that's currently in the GOES West position?
Okay, I'll take that one. Is what we normally do after launch is it takes, I think was mentioned earlier by Sandra, that it takes about 2 weeks to get to on-orbit. Once we get to on-orbit, it takes about a month for us to outgas our instruments and get them ready for operation. And then there's about another 5 months or so that we test the spacecraft and the instruments and validate the product. So in sum, it's about 6 months from launch till the time that we're ready to start drifting to our new position. Now, we will test GOES 17 at the same location that we've tested GOES 16 and our previous GOES spacecraft, right at 90 degrees west longitude. And then we use that common location to help validate our products. And then we'll move it 30 degrees to the, actually 40 degrees or so to the west, to 137.
Okay.
And that will happen. We should be situated at 137 by the end of the year, by late 2018.
Okay. And does GOES 15 just go into storage or as a backup or what?
Currently, it's still – right now, it's at 135. We can keep it there for a short period of time, but that would be an operational decision made by the NESDIS Office of Satellite Data Operations, OSPO, Satellite and Product Operations, OSPO. But I think there's a number of things we could do with it. We could move it also to mid-CONUS where we store our spacecraft at present. That's where GOES 14 is. But I think I would defer to the NOAA Operational Organization, OSPO.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jeff Faust from Space News. Your line is open.
Thanks. This is sort of related to the previous question about there with GOES 17. Once it's in place, you'll have several older GOES satellites in orbit in various stages of storage. Just curious what the plans are for keeping them in operational storage or retiring them or perhaps even transferring them. I know the Air Force was interested at one time in taking over one of the GOES satellites to fill one of its tactical weather needs.
AJ, if you want to, I can talk a little bit to the operation, but if you want to talk to any of the policy, that's
yeah. Let me take the piece about the Air Force. So you're right. We are working with the Air Force to figure out if we can, if any of our older assets can help meet their observational needs or requirements. So we have a broad agreement between NOAA and the Air Force on space-based environmental monitoring. And as part of that umbrella agreement, we've just concluded an annex to look at engineering studies or to conduct engineering studies to look at moving one of our residual GOES assets to support the Air Force's and DOD's tactical needs. So we're just getting that work started. Like I said, we just concluded the annex. The first phase will be doing the engineering studies. And then if we decide that that makes sense and it makes sense for the Air Force and it makes sense for us, we'll go ahead and do another annex or another agreement to actually move whatever satellite we decide meets their needs. So we're really at the early stages of our dealings with the Air Force. So, Tim, if you want to take the other part of that question.
Sure. I would just emphasize that we do have a mid-CONUS point that we utilize that's really ideally located at 105 degrees west longitude, which is roughly over Texas. And that's where we store our operational spare. Currently, GOES 14 is there. As you know, we recently retired GOES 13, which was in the GOES East position, and it's currently moving to 60 degrees west longitude, which is a spot that we can store it for a period of time. GOES 15 will likely be moved to the central CONUS position for storage, but again, that's an operational decision. I say that we move it to 105 mainly because it's a nice location, roughly 30 degrees from either coast, from either operational position, I should say, so that if we were to need a satellite right away, we could wake it up, bring it out of storage, and start imaging right away as we move either GOES 14 or any other stored spacecraft from the previous series to whatever satellite is ailing. Is there any follow-up on that, or does that answer the question?
That's great. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 from your phone, unmute your line, and record your first and your last name clearly when prompted. Our next question comes from Mike Caro from Aviation Week and Space Technology. Your line is open.
Thank you. Got a lot of information I was thinking of asking, but I would like to check on the cost of the spacecraft or mission or program. I'm not sure how you characterize it.
I think I can grab that. This is Tim Walsh. The way we normally, Mike, the way we measure our program is a life cycle cost, and it really measures the early 2000s, I should say, 2001, when we started the development of the ABI, all the way to the end of our mission, which is 2036. Right now, that is it's above $10 billion, but if you think about it, that's four spacecraft. That's the whole ground system that I talked about earlier in three different locations, and the operations all the way out through 2036. So we normally don't quantify it in terms of the unit, mainly because of, as you can imagine, with the developmental costs and other factors, there's a number of different ways to look at that. We look at it in terms of a life cycle cost for GOZAR.
Thank you, sir.
Sure.
Thank you. There are no questions in queue at this time.
Okay, are there any other questions?
You may press star one if you would like to ask a question. Okay, our next question comes from Marcia Smith from spacepolicyonline.com. Your line is open.
Thanks for taking your second question. Someone mentioned that this also has a SARSAT capability on it. Could someone bring me up to date on where SARSAT stands? Those used to be on polar orbiting satellites, so they cover the whole globe. Is that system being moved to geostationary satellites? And if so, what's the effect on rescuing people?
So this is AJ. I can take that one. You're absolutely right. The SARSAT system used to be on the old NOAA POSE satellites as well as on the GOES satellites. We are moving it, but not necessarily to geostationary orbit. Our future for SARSAT is going to be on the Air Force GPS satellites as well as the European Galileo satellites, so satellites in mid-Earth orbit. From there, you get the benefits of both the GEO orbit, which is immediate notification, as well as the benefits of the LEO orbit, which gave you the Doppler, which gave you the positioning. So MEO does both. But so we've started that transition. But as Tim mentioned, we still have SARSAT flying on GOES until we can finish that transition to what we call the MEO-SAR system, which is the Medium Earth Orbiting Search and Rescue System.
So is that still a partnership? It used to be the U.S. and Russia and France and someone else. Is it still?
And Canada.
And Canada?
Yeah, so that partnership and that program still exist.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. There are no other questions in queue at this time.
Okay, well, if there are no further questions, I think we'll go ahead and wrap it up. I'd like to thank all of our speakers for their time and want to also thank everyone for dialing in. For any additional information about GOES-S and to stay on top of all of the latest news about the launch, please visit nesdis.noaa.gov/GOES-R. And in about 90 minutes, the audio of this telecon will be posted online, link with the media advisory. And for any reporters with any remaining follow-up questions, please email me or my colleague Brady Phillips, and our contact information is on the media advisory. So this concludes the call, and again, thank you all very much.
Thank you for your participation in today's conference. You may disconnect at this time.